And we are back with episode 782 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Gary from Jacksonville. And boy, the shows are back, John. They're all back. I just keep... It's great.
Yeah, they are. Who writes this crap? Well, don't worry. We'll explain that reference soon enough. But yes, we are going to be getting into some episodic discussion, and we are happy to do so. We had quite a few shows this time, a few that were debuting their seasons, and a few that were actually wrapping up. And we'll probably be getting into both of those in due course. But before we do any of that, Gary, if you could give a disclaimer.
Yes, in the course of our discussions, talking about last week's shows, and we try to give you about a week to watch them before we discuss them, so hopefully you're all caught up. But if you're not, we're going to spoil them. And, you know, we're spoiling a lot of the shows. We're not just talking about, you know, Supergirl and Grimm, but we're going to be hitting Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Timeless, The Expanse. So hang on tight. You're in for a great show, but, yeah, we're going to talk about everything. So if you don't want to know who lives, dies, or kisses one another, this isn't the show for you. But I think you do want to know, so keep listening.
That's right. And, well, we are, as usual, going to be starting off with the shows that were at the bottom of the list, our bottom three. Then we'll be getting into the top three, and then whatever it is that is on the list that really tickles our fancy, I guess you could say. Is that the right way to put it? If not, we'll figure out a different term. But, yeah, we are going to go ahead and start with this bottom three. And I have to say, this week we had a pretty wide grouping. We were as low as a 6.5 and all the way as high as a 9. But these three shows were either average or a little below. And they're all shows that I'm a little bit surprised to see down there.
Oh, I sure was. It hurt to grade them low. Yeah. They deserved it, but it hurt.
Yeah, they deserved it, but they did... They are a surprise. Let's go ahead and start with the first of them here, coming in at a dead average 7, and it is Grimm, Season 6, Episode 5, The 7-Year Itch. A new Vezin with a deadly hunger is unearthed after lying dormant for 7 years. At the same time, Nick, Hank, and Wu... That sounds like a bad
God bless
joke.
You. Yeah.
Right. Investigate a bizarre murder in a local park. Gee, I wonder if they're connected.
Nah.
Possibly. And, well, not only did it average a 7, but we both gave it that 7, so that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That might have been too generous.
I was actually on the fence, I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Gary, how about you? Why did you feel like this was just barely maybe hitting the mediocre mark here?
Hi, welcome to Grimm Season 2. We found an old script somewhere in one of the bookcases, and what the hell? We were running out of ideas in our last season, so here, we're going to dust this one off and throw it at you. You'll never know the difference. That's what it felt like to me, John. This was
completely disconnected from everything else that has been happening.
Yes, as we literally have precious few storylines, episodes left to us to explore a variety of things. Everything from the, you know, from sort of the Grimm bloodline through the Vezin maybe perhaps revealing themselves, through the stick of destiny, through, you know, what's going to happen with Eve, what's going to happen with Diana. Is Renard really neutered and he's not going to cause any more problems? What are the babies going to look like? all these things we want to know. And instead, we get what I will refer to as a filler episode. Something that bears literally has no influence on any of the ongoing storylines that everyone wants to see resolved. I mean, there was a slight Renard, maybe a subplot that perhaps linked things together, but not very well and not enough for me.
I can't disagree. I mean, there was maybe the stuff with, what do we call her now? Juliet? Eve?
I'm still going with Eve. Well, they still call her Eve, so I'll go with Eve.
Okay, Eve. That was about as close as you got, and it was barely connective tissue for this episode. I mean, the vast majority of the time, to your point and what you were saying, was this really slow and plodding investigation, and there really wasn't even that much of a story or much of a twist. I mean, they did have a little bit of a twist at the end, but even then, all it did was essentially render Nick and his team kind of immaterial and useless to the plot. It just kind of happened. And yeah, it was like, okay, they investigate. They don't even really end up resolving the issue, and done. Yeah, it felt really odd. It's almost like you said, it really did feel like they just said, let's just have a one-off episode that doesn't have to be involved with many of the other storylines. But
Yeah, I agree. As I said, you know, they'd been doing so well lately that I expected them to continue to do so. And when they fell so short this episode, I felt robbed. It was, there's so much to tell and so little time left to do it. And we get something like this. I think, you know, if I didn't know it was their last season, this show, this episode might not have bothered me as much. But since it is, it does. There's a lot more material. Why couldn't they cover something else than have a villain of the week? As I said, this might have been nice, you know, mid-second season, we see the team working together to, figuring out the puzzle, so to speak. But not now, not this late in the game, do we need a Vesson of the Week story anymore. And if we did, it needs to almost be background. Oh, yeah, we got to take care of him. Okay, so what's going on with, X? I was just very let down that it was not a, I guess I'd refer to it as an arc story at all. It's sort of disappointing, and I mean, the team functions so well at this point together. You know, everything was inevitable, so it was just a matter of time till he got discovered and everything like that. It was a cute concept, I'll admit, the whole cicada based Vesson. I can't say that I objected to the idea. Just as I said, this should have been a season one or a season two episode, not six.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they've just done so much better since then. To regress is a little bit disappointing. So, okay. So that means that we can move on to the next show here at the bottom, also coming in at an average of 7, and that would be Supergirl, Season 2, Episode 11, The Martian Chronicles. Armek arrives in National City intent on taking Magan back to Mars to face her punishment as a traitor. Thinking she'll be safe at the DEO, Hank and Supergirl are in for a startling surprise when shapeshifter Armek is in the building and under disguise. Yeah, so you gave this one a fairly low score. So, yeah, again, what was your rationale for this one in terms of why it was at the bottom of the list?
Hank Magan vibe is just, it's still not working for me. I just don't. I can understand how he would want someone of his species to not die, but this emotional attachment that that he's gotten from his species genocide, the race that basically committed genocide to his people. I'm just thinking this means that Hank is really screwed up in the head, and he's really screwed up bad, that he's reaching out necessarily to her, not just as a friend, but almost as family, and it just doesn't work for me. The way that Supergirl was honestly minimized in this episode sort of surprises me. I mean, I know the Martians are supposed to be tough, but geez, they just whacked her all the heck around. Supergirl or Superman, they often have to scale their powers to the villains they face, and I felt they really ratcheted her down. Also, we didn't sort of get an all hands on deck call during this, what I would consider to be extremely high crisis. I was expecting to see Guardian run in, Mon-El come back from the bar or something like that, and have a big free for all, and we didn't seem to get that either. So I just sort of disappointing the. Oh gosh, one of us is the villain is such a tired trope, even if it is involving shape-shifting now, that I would have rather seen something more direct. Trying to think what else. The last nail in the coffin. Supergirl's patronizing of Wynn about being Guardian sidekick. It's annoying, and I'm surprised he doesn't tell her to shut the heck up. What's your feeling about her waving her finger? I don't like that you're doing this, but I understood it at first. And are we going to have our minute of her shaking her finger every episode now?
Yes.
Which we've been getting.
At some point. Yeah, pretty much. At some point, she's just going to start turning to the screen and telling us why that's a bad thing. It is getting very repetitive, but I do have to also underscore everything you were saying about Hank and Magan and the whole Martian thing. Really just not engaging, and I guess it would have been more if it wasn't for the fact that it kind of devolved into a CGI fest at some point and just got boring because it's like, oh look, two CGI creatures beating the heck out of each other, even though we know that it's these two characters that we've been watching. It just isn't that interesting.
The CGI was good. I won't say it was bad CGI, but...
No, I wouldn't say either, but...
So, yeah, just sort of let me down. Are we done with this? Can we move on?
With Supergirl?
No, I just meant the episode. just to the writers, sort of. Okay, have we played out this Martian storyline enough that you can stop it now? Because, you know, I'd like to see more Supergirl and less Adventures of the DEO. I don't mind that it's there, but I feel like they're relying on it a little too much for story structure now.
Yeah, I think so too. I think I mentioned before that they were getting to a point where they are starting to beat the you know, like, moral theme of the week a little bit much, whether it is just directly directly with Kara or Kara and Manel or whoever else it is that she decides to chastise this week. And it is getting just a bit much and repetitive, and it almost feels like, can we just have a standard episode? Can we just have, like, something that doesn't have to involve some kind of weird life lesson? Can we just, you know, it just, if nothing else, it is starting to feel a little overly earnest, and I understand that that's something that they are trying to use to, I guess, distinguish the show. But I feel like it needs to take a break. And maybe it will, since they are going to have a musical episode coming soon. Unless she starts moralizing in song. In which case, way to double down.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
Yes. Don't you do that, Mon-El. In D. But, yeah, this one, I guess the Martian thing, just because it hasn't been my favorite subplot this season at all, just fell flat. I knew that they had to go there somewhere. And I guess somebody else mentioned, too, that, like, Armek as the character, it's like they introduced that as McGann's husband or whatever else, and it really never seemed to go anywhere.
Life mate or something.
Yeah, it just was thrown out there, and it never factored into anything. So, kind of an oddity.
Well, I mean, even she says, no, it's not, like, romantic or anything. It's more just, like, a breeding kind of thing, and, you know, it doesn't mean anything to me either, mainly. So, okay. But yeah, I just hope that, yeah, they played this out and please move on to your next arc of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And I also noticed they're minimizing the grouchy boss. He's definitely getting nowhere near the time that Cat used to get in the show, as far as a boss goes.
Yeah, that's true. I think that it's just kind of there for when the plot needs to... When it's needed for the plot. And that's about it. So, yeah. Unfortunately, a bit of a misfire. So we shall see what happens beyond that. Let's see here. That means that we are going to talk about what is, unfortunately, our bottom show for the week. And I guess this one's a little less of a surprise, but...
You expected less?
No, I gotta say that after the last couple weeks, I was hoping that there had been a full turnaround for this show, but unfortunately, Legends of Tomorrow, Season 2, Episode 11, Turncoat, got a 6.5. The Legends travel to the winter of 1776 to protect George Washington and the American Revolutionary War. Unfortunately, things don't go as planned, and Sarah sends out Nathan Amaya to help. Yeah, so after a couple of really cheesetastic episodes that just seem to embrace Legends of Tomorrow's innate absurdity, we got this. And I'll just say, I was kind of referencing the fact that Mick did the opening monologue for this episode, and it was absolutely hysterical, and I thought, okay, boy, are they doubling down on all this. This is great. This is exactly the kind of irreverent, silly... absurd attitude that they really need to have, and then that was literally the best part of the episode.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you.
Who writes this stuff? don't you idiots have this yet? Anyway, it definitely was the highlight, and then it just seemed to be there. You gave it a 6. Clearly, you also felt like this was lacking.
Well, you know, as I look at another time travel show that we will review next show, probably, or maybe this show, I think, wow, it can be done right.
Yeah. And this one isn't, and it wasn't done right for a few different reasons. I think one failure of this show is when they do show the historical figure, so to speak, they seem to be caught up in the whirlwind. And most of the times, historic figures are pretty strong, important people, and they're not going to settle with getting pushed around all over the place the way that George Washington, general of an army, is going to listen to, I mean, this no disrespect, but in the time frame, to a girl. Just won't happen. Why? Because that's the culture. The whole... oh, geez. I was going to say Rory turned bad. Rip Hunter turned evil all of a sudden without any remorse or inner doubt or hesitation. Just feels lame, and I almost want to think it's a different Earth character given the universe that we're in. But it's not an effective villain device. I don't feel horrible that he's acting poorly to everyone. It's not coming across for me, at least. White Canary. I remember when she used to get into uniform. I remember when she used to have weapons that she would fight with. And now it looks like she's sitting around in a hoodie all the time. I don't like the changing of the character. I realize that she's supposed to be in charge and the lead right now. But how come everyone else is still, you know, sort of changing and getting into the costume and she does zero?
Yeah, it is an odd thing for them to do, isn't it? I mean, it seems like they took a character that was so popular because of her physicality and just decided that, no, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to take her out of the field, and that's all there is to it. And, yeah, I don't know that it really works all the time for me either. I think it something more balanced would have been better, maybe. Occasionally do action and occasionally show the leadership skills, but I feel like there were other characters that they could have thrown in that role, and they did this intentionally to not have it be one of the white males, I guess you could say, on the team. But
I suppose, and I don't have a problem with that, but I'd like to hear a "let's go" instead of "you need to go do this."
Yeah, it's like I'd still like to see field.
Her. Yeah, exactly. I'd like to see her involved, not sending orders from the Wave Rider. And that feels like what we're getting. I just feel it's a waste of the character. It's just not the character was not meant to be this, yet this is what we're getting. So that's been an ongoing complaint for me in this character in this role, but it just seems to just keep coming up and they're not changing it, so I'll complain now. So.
Yeah, but I think that this episode, again, unfortunately, I have to say it feels like a regression because I really was, as I said, hoping that even though Legends of Tomorrow has been pulling this whole, you know, over-the-top attitude for a while, it seemed like they really hit their stride. And it just seems like maybe that was just a temporary thing, and that would be unfortunate, because that's what the show really needs. If it's going to continue, if it's going to justify its existence, it needs to actually be its own thing. And even though I do feel like they took three villains and almost made them campy farce.
Well, in this one, they made them zero because they made Rick the main villain. We hardly saw anybody in this episode. Yeah, they weren't. And maybe that's part of the problem I had, too. We really didn't have a villain. We just had Rip, who was, I guess you could say, brainwashed. So. Mm-hmm. I want to see villains. I want to have grand plans. I don't want mustache twirling villains. I want ones who are actually doing something for a reason, even if I don't like it or agree with it, that they have some sort of plan going forward. And it seems really weak. And I still don't even like some of the time frames they grab the villains for. And some of their motivations are rather poor. So we have subpar villains with no good reason or drive. And then we don't even get to see them. There's a recipe for you.
Yeah. Could you imagine, either any of those villains coming back to their original shows, now that you've seen them as they are as the Legion of Doom? Like, Malcolm Merlyn, for instance. He kind of took a bit of a turn. It works in this show in isolation, but I really don't know how I would feel if those three showed up on Arrow.
Merlyn's a complete tool in this. What are you talking about? He's horrible.
He wouldn't be...
I'm surprised the actor isn't objecting to this portrayal.
I don't know. I have a feeling he's perfectly happy with the fact that he's getting a paycheck to basically do whatever he wants.
Well, that's true. I have seen his butt, so you know, I know he'll do things for a certain amount of money. So
you're not wrong.
And I guess this is probably one of those cases. So, but yeah, but it's just the character is by no means fearful, intimidating, or scary. So and Zoom might possibly be the most threatening guy there, but geez, it's just not. No, I mean, they are not scary at all. It's just not. No. Maybe that's what it is. We have no fear.
That's it. I think there really is no reason to be afraid of them, given the portrayal that they have in the show. It plays as a comedy, which is fine. It would have been fine in complete isolation. When you then say that it's part of this bigger franchise, it completely undercuts them as a threatening force. So try to go back. After that, good luck. Go back to the first season of Arrow and watch Malcolm Merlyn again. See how that works.
Yeah, he was Ra's al Ghul. Really?
Right.
Really?
Exactly. Yes, let's see. That's the bottom three, and I think that for quite a few people, that is a bit of a shock and surprise. Which means that we can go ahead and move on to what I believe is better material here.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yes, much higher on the list. And that, let's go ahead to our top three. And our number three show for the week is The OA, Season 1, Episode 8, Invisible Self. In the Season 1 finale, the OA recalls the last night at Haps, and the fragments of her dream come together. Something like that. It did come in at a score of 8.5. And I have to say that I was a little surprised at the news earlier today that they were coming out with a second season, what they're calling Part 2, because this really felt like a very self-contained show. And it's a really interesting way to end it. It's a little ambiguous, but after flirting with an awful lot of spiritual type of context and all these ideas around, you know, these characters and their purpose and the idea that they may be able to tap into some kind of spiritual power and so forth. The finale, and again, spoilers, people, we gave a spoiler warning. The final episode actually introduces the concept that the main character may be completely, utterly delusional. And that everything she's been telling these other characters throughout this whole story is all in her head. And in fact, the end, which is kind of, at first when you watch it, you think to yourself, oh no, they're turning it back around at the end because the characters all essentially kind of band together in a way similar to what the main character was describing had happened before in order to achieve a purpose. It's entirely possible that they aren't having any effect at all, and this is just them kind of choosing to at least take action rather than be passive. And I'm being very vague because it is, like I said, a very ambiguous ending, but when you see it, it kind of does, you can step back and basically ask yourself, did they just buy into her delusion? It's possible that they did. It's still possible that none of the things that she said actually happened. So it is an interesting storytelling conceit, and I enjoyed it on that level. I did take a little bit off from what Nadim gave the whole series a 9, so he really quite enjoyed it. But I think that the ending was taken off because they wound up using a school shooting as kind of the set piece, and it doesn't really come across as, it comes across as a little bit manipulative, to say the least. But as a whole, I really enjoyed this series a lot more than I thought I would, and it was very thought-provoking at the end, because, again, it's like, there's such a thing as a show having an unreliable narrator, and then there's finding out well into the story when you really were buying into the story she was telling that, oh, now I have reason to doubt what she was saying. Boy, even I got sucked into it. And that's a pretty interesting and bold move. I'm sure that's why a lot of people had such mixed reactions to this show. Some people absolutely hated it, and other people really bought into it and loved it. So, an interesting and divisive show, and like I said, when you have a show that actually accomplishes that and ends in such a way where it leaves you in a certain mental space, I don't know that having a part two is really what you want to do. It may ruin the effect. But I suppose we will eventually find out. All right, that brings us to our number two show for the week, and that is Timeless, Season 1, Episode 14, The Lost Generation. Lucy struggles with her newfound identity as Flynn vanishes to 1927 France on the day that Charles Lindbergh completes his transatlantic flight. And this episode came in at an average of 8.75. And Gary, this was your highest scored episode of the week.
Yes, and I almost went higher with it. I thought they hit so many things here. And I had several revelations during the course of this episode. The first is that, yes, I'm all Team Flynn now. He is the good guy. I'm absolutely, you know, I was leaning that way for a few episodes now, and now I'm convinced his is the right way to fix things. He's actually the only guy trying to make any change and do anything. His methods may not be nice, but at least he's trying. Gosh, what else did we get? We got Lucy's mother giving her the same diary that Flynn carries around for a nice little time loop closing of the loop there. We had found out who Lucy's father was, but now, gosh, he's in charge of the time machine now. And how the hell did that happen? Wyatt escapes out. They go back in time to find Lindbergh. Lucy makes this, impassioned speech to Lindbergh to change his ways. And we get even more hinting clues about Rittenhouse and hear about bloodlines and stuff like that. Then we get to meet Ernest Hemingway. We get to meet Josephine Baker. We see across the other room F. Scott Fitzgerald. We get teasers about Gertrude Stein. The name dropping was really good. And as I mentioned, the problem that I had with Legends, both Josephine Baker, I felt, and Ernest Hemingway were very active participants. They weren't just some statue or lump of clay getting pushed or moved around with the main characters. They became their own characters. They were reasonably fleshed out for the time they had, and they participated and contributed. And I liked that part a lot, regardless of who the people were. I like the fact that the writers involved them in the storyline. It made for a much better cohesive story. So we have jailbreaks, we have government takeovers, we have Ernest Hemingway, we have Lindbergh, we have someone begging for redemption to change their ways and find out, sadly, it doesn't happen. We get this time artifact, the book that's going to be started, and we find out why she started it, because her mother said they always write out their problems. So we even have why it's being done. So I just love this all over the place. This was really, really good. Oh, and that and Rufus constantly asking Lucy to not tell his girlfriend about different things. That was a nice little touch as well. So, humor, seriousness. I don't know what more it could have had except to have Rittenhouse burning in front of me, hanging from a noose. So win-win-win for me.
Yeah, you kind of put your finger on just about everything. And my other comment would be that this is exactly what we were talking about in terms of the show taking such a drastic uptick. And I agree when it comes to the whole idea of who's the hero, who's the villain. That's been a central point of a lot of our commentary for this show, and I think that it is the most improved area, is this whole idea of who's right and who's wrong? Who's got the moral high ground? I don't know that anybody really even has moral high ground at this point. It's just that others are digging deeper.
That's a good way to put it.
So, yeah, it is definitely definitely the most improved show this season in terms of throughout the season. It started off in good shape and then has just slowly but surely improved in just about every level. They're balancing out the plot, overall plot, with the episodic elements that they're blending very well together. They're rearranging how the time traveling is taking place, so it's not the same characters every single time. There's a little bit of history now in between everyone. Rittenhouse is finally getting a lot of front and center attention. And yeah, this is kind of what they were building towards, and I think that they're doing a great job of it. It's kind of sad to think that in two episodes it could be the end of the series, though. I know we keep on harping on that.
Oh, jeez, you're not kidding. I tell you,
this is one of those deals where this is kind of a cautionary tale for a lot of shows. Yes, it does take a lot of time for some shows to get their stride, and nowadays, if you don't do it in the first few weeks, you may wind up on the unfortunate chopping block, because I think if this kind of storytelling was taking place earlier on, maybe the show would have gotten legs, but I really felt like I was on the verge a couple times of letting the show go. In fact, there were a couple times where I was like, if it just wasn't for the fact that there was kind of like a lull in programming and there was, you know, hey, this is something at least mildly interesting to watch, I might have dropped it like episode 5 or 6. So I can't say I blame people because they had a rough start. It's just, yeah, this is one of those shows that if you let it spool out, if you let it and give it a chance for the full first season, things eventually do improve enough to really justify even more. And unfortunately, it may be too little too late.
Mm.
But it happens. Wouldn't be the first time we had a show that was rising up the ranks and then got cut down in its prime. But there we are. All right. That is our number 2 show for the week, which brings us to our number 1 show. And, Gary, unfortunately, I know you don't watch this show, but I'm about to...
No, I do watch this show.
Oh, you do?
I do watch this show. I just have not had a chance.
Okay. Okay. I was going to say, wait, normally you jump at the shows that are at the top of your list, but yeah, that's okay.
Time is a limited resource, and unfortunately, I'm trapped by the current constraints of my time and space continuum, but I do not like it. So,
understand why.
Go ahead and go for it. But, I'll catch up probably hopefully before the next show so I can get into episode 3 with you. So, but go ahead.
I won't spoil too much then. Because this is definitely the kind of show where you want to go in with as fresh a perspective as possible. And that is The Expanse season 2, episodes 1 and 2, Safe and Doors and Corners. James Holden and the crew deal with the aftermath of their escape from Eros in the season 2 premiere. Boy, that doesn't tell you a whole lot. I'm going to go ahead and give Edmund's comments here. He was able to give us some commentary.
Yay!
As he says here, my comment as the book reader is they're smashing together the beginning of book 2 into the end of book 1. Yes, that's an obvious play on what's revealed at the end of these episodes, which works better for the series, expanding its remarkable scope. Bobby Gunner Draper kicks off the second book, and it makes sense to bring her into the mix to shove this second season into overdrive. And major props for casting her properly as a large but obviously compelling woman. I'm still a little miffed that they went conventional with Holden, casting him younger than the very active but middle-aged man he is in the books. But boy, do I have to give a big thumbs up to the character of Bobby Draper. She is a really awesome addition to this season. And if you loved the intrigue of the first season, as well as some of the body horror, terror aspects of the proto-molecule and everything that happened on Eros, the second season kicks off with all of that and actually does an incredibly good job of bringing you back up to speed. I forget exactly which show it was that I criticized for not doing this. I did have some comments in my own notes regarding Colony, for instance, for not really doing this very well. But I seem to recall that there was it was Man in the High Castle, for sure. That first episode of that second season came back, and it was incredibly confusing. I mean, it was just hard to figure out where everybody was, what was going on with the characters and everything else. I really did not feel that way with The Expanse. If anything, to me, they really took a few lessons from the first season and managed to ramp up the storytelling to a point where it's even more compelling. Definitely they're building on what they've already laid out in the first season, and this is more than deserved to be at the 9 that it averaged at. And that's across 2 episodes. So I think, even in my opinion, that it started off strong in that first hour and then just actually got even stronger in the second hour. So, Gary, you're definitely going to want to catch up on this one, so maybe we can dig into it even more deeply or in depth in the future.
Oh, no, that sounds good. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I enjoyed the first season, so.
Yeah, I think that you definitely get that whole, you know, Game of Thrones in space thing that they were talking about is still true. But I also feel like, there are almost elements of Babylon 5 in this. If you know, I think you understand what I mean when it's like, you know, you have the various factions within the solar system kind of gearing up for their eventual clash. And there's definitely those vibes, as well as some other classics. But, oh, there is one. I have to gush. I'm sorry. It's not really too much of a spoiler to say this because it's still more than worthy of watching. But there is a ship battle in space that takes place in one of these episodes. I forget exactly where the cutoff was. And it's just so well done. It just really is. I mean, rail guns in space.
It's sweet.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to see. And the effects are really stellar. So, no pun intended. So, yeah, it is definitely, it's definitely worth it. Definitely recommend it to anybody out there who has not yet watched The Expanse. Catch up. This is one of those shows that it is obviously extremely expensive for sci-fi to do. We should be supporting it as sci-fi fans. This is hard sci-fi on TV. Right here. So, watch it. If you haven't seen it, watch it. It's definitely up the alley. And I do want to also say this. Sci-fi these days, I don't know, Gary, if you've noticed this or not, because you may be watching it on a recording or a DVR. On the regular broadcast, it's the censored version. But online, you get the unrated, uncensored version.
Yes, I do watch it online primarily. So
you know what I mean.
I thought the censors just loosened up. Okay.
No, because they don't do that with just this show. In fact, it's even more obvious when you watch The Magicians, because there's a lot more salty language there, and a little more extreme. So it's interesting because obviously sci-fi does a lot of co-productions, and so they have just the international versions, which are not censored, and then they mildly censor the language for TV broadcast here. But I prefer watching it then on the online versions because I want to see the show as it was originally filmed and intended. So it does add a little bit to it because otherwise it does feel like it's tamed slightly. But it's nice to know that they're not like adding in gratuitous nudity at all or anything like that. It's they're doing what the story is kind of leaning towards or demanding to, if you want to put it that way. But let's see here. How are we doing with time? I think that actually that is a really good place for us to go ahead and wrap this particular episode up. And when we come back next time, we're going to go ahead into some of the other shows that were on in the past week as we wrap up our week. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.